At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Here's the truth about this economy. Things get better and things get worse. Today, we kind of split the difference. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tuesday today, this one is the 26th of April. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Hey, did you hear about the terrible day on Wall Street? 2.5%, 3%, 4% losses on the major indices. And you know what that means, right? It means stocks go down, too. Look at a chart for the past 10 years. Then take a deep breath. That's all I got on that. Another chart of interest today, perhaps. Real estate, the latest S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller National Home Price Index, here and after simply the Case-Shiller Index. Well, it came out this morning. Prices up nearly 20% in February over February a year ago. And perhaps related, we learned from the good people at the Commerce Department that new home sales were off last month, down to a four-month low. This all comes, of course, at a time when mortgage rates are going up a lot, so we thought it'd be a good time to get Vivian Geller on the phone again. She is the CFO at Pacific Trust Group. That's a mortgage lender here in Los Angeles. Vivian, good to talk to you again.
Hi, Kai. Thanks for having me again.
So we had you on a year ago. We went back and looked it up. Had you on a year ago, and we've been talking to you now for 2 years, maybe a little bit more than that. And every single time we've gotten you on the phone, I've said, how's business? And you've said, oh, my God, we're unbelievably busy. But is that still the case?
Oh, my God, no. It's basically come to a screeching halt within the last, I'd say, since end of January, once rates started to go up and the pipelines cleared, it just really slowed down.
I don't imagine that's great for your business, but honestly, a slightly slower housing market might not be a terrible thing, all things considered.
No, I mean, I agree with you. The market was just too crazy. The low rates drove up too much, you know, business, too much demand, and the prices ultimately. Yeah. So that had to be reeled in. And of course, increasing interest rates is one way of doing that. So I mean, ultimately, I think it'll be a good thing. But we're just going to have to ride it out, you know, at least, I would say, through this year, at least.
Oh, wow. That long, really?
I think so. I think rates are going to continue to rise. The Fed has already said that they're going to increase the prime lending rate in May, and I suspect they're going to continue to do so a bit through the end of the year. So I just can't see them coming down, but we'll find out.
We'll stipulate here that Los Angeles, where you and I are, is a ridiculous housing market. But the question on the broader national housing market is, how long do you suppose until the slowdown that you're seeing here, and I'm going to assume other people are seeing in other cities, how long till that does something on prices?
I think it's going to take a while. I don't think that, you know, we might see maybe prices go up through the year just a touch, but I just can't see them going down, whether it's in LA or nationally. at least within the next 9 months. Mm. It takes a while for the rates to really affect the market, and there's still no inventory. So that's keeping the demand up. And of course, that keeps the prices up.
Right, right. And to that inventory thing, I mean, look, if you're thinking about selling your house, but you got a really nice mortgage rate, it's not like you're going to make that move and say, oh, yeah, I'll go from like 3.25% to 5, 5.5, 6% on my mortgage. I mean, that's going to be a deal breaker right there.
There's no incentive for someone to, right, that has a 2.5% interest rate to sell their house, you know, especially if you bought it within the last 10 years because you've built up some equity and you've got a great rate. So if you were to sell, you'd have to go into at least a rate that's double what you have, and the price is going to be considerably more. And on top of that, you've got property tax, so which is increased. Mm-hmm. So there's really little incentive, which I think is why we're not seeing a whole lot of inventory right now. You know, people just they don't want to sell. They have nowhere to go, you know.
What do you hear, just in a business proposition sense, what do you hear from your colleagues at bigger mortgage companies? Because if it's quiet for you, it's quiet for a lot of people. And the mortgage business is a business. And if you haven't got the business, you don't need as many people is where I'm going here.
Right. Well, we've already seen several large mortgage banks close because volume is down, you know, 60%, 70%. And everyone hired over the last few years, but there's just not enough work. So we're seeing layoffs now, unfortunately, across the board.
So just to recap here, maybe 6 to 9 months before prices start responding. And after that, who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't think prices are going to come down considerably. I think they'll level, but I just don't see the market falling to any significant extent.
Vivian Geller, she's the chief financial officer at a mortgage lender here in LA called Pacific Trust Group. We talk to her every now and then. Vivian, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time and your expertise, as always.
Thank you so much, Kai. Take care.
On Wall Street today, no. Just no. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The global energy challenge is a little bit like squeezing a balloon. Right? You tighten up on one kind of energy, demand for others gets bigger. And for years now, as we've all gotten more worried about climate change, coal, the dirtiest of fossil fuels, has been on its way out in most of the world, slowly being replaced. Or so we thought. Turns out coal's been making a big comeback in the post or really late pandemic economy, a comeback that's only intensified as Russia has invaded Ukraine. Marketplace's Lily Jamali is on that one for us today.
There's a game of musical chairs being played right now by the world's coal-hungry nations. EU sanctions on Russian coal have its members looking elsewhere. Meanwhile, others are buying Russian coal on the cheap, says Steve Sakala of Tufts.
I think India is just going to scale up its purchases from Russia, and Europe is going to scale up its purchases from, say, the U.S.
Sakala says the shortage of natural gas is a big reason why. When there's not enough, coal plays backup, because reliable power is always in demand. Patrick McGinley teaches law at West Virginia University. He says his state, the second largest coal producer in the U.S., is still recovering from a bust in the last decade.
And so the hope is that coal will be experiencing a boom. But I think that's short-sighted.
That's because globally, even the largest coal users are set to cut back, despite their needs now, says Sonia Carley of Indiana University.
Within several years, we should see a decline from India and China as they start to close some of their coal operations and move more towards renewables like wind and solar.
Here in the U.S., existing coal plants are being used more lately, but that's probably temporary, says Rice University's Daniel Cohan.
The long-term plans are still for utility companies to close more and more of their coal plants.
And we're not building more of them, meaning coal's current resurgence might not last. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
White House announced a new strategy today to help people who've been in prison land on their feet once they're released. One part of doing that is helping those people before they get out. So the Biden administration is expanding a program that gives incarcerated students access to Pell Grants. That's financial aid for undergraduates that doesn't have to be repaid. And it's a change. Almost 30 years ago, Congress said prisoners couldn't get Pell Grants. Congress reversed itself in 2020, which gets us to today. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes covers education for us.
Tracy Andrus teaches criminal justice at Wiley College, a historically black school in eastern Texas. And in 2017, he helped the college start offering classes in several prisons in Louisiana.
We started in Louisiana because I'm familiar with the prison system there because I spent 3 years in it myself.
Andrus went to prison for check fraud, and after he was released in 1994...
In order for me to climb up the ladder with this ex-felon mark in my jacket, I'm going to need something a little bit extra. You got to have some credentials when you come to certain jobs.
Andrus now has a PhD, and he wants to help others get that little bit extra. And he says the college where he works relies on Second Chance Pell to offer classes in prison. This expansion lets more schools participate. James Quall is undersecretary for the Department of Education.
So this gives students who are in prison an opportunity to actually pay tuition at these programs that are going to prepare them to move on.
Incarcerated people in any kind of educational program are 43% less likely to return to prison, according to a study from the RAND Corporation. Lois Davis is one of the authors.
Most people that are incarcerated today will return to your local community. And so the question becomes then, what do you want that to look like for your community?
Once people are out of prison, there are still barriers to getting work, says Tracy Andrus of Wiley College.
If you've been to prison for writing checks, what does that have to do with you getting a license as a plumber or an electrician or as a contractor that builds houses?
Andrus had to fight to get a real estate license himself and says a felony shouldn't prevent you from getting these kinds of jobs. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Coming up.
We're in this together. We're trying to do the right thing.
Trying. But first, let's do the numbers. Oh, man. I would have bet a paycheck that today would have been the Wawa's. Honestly, I would have. Dow Industrial's down 809 today, about 2.4%, finished at 33,240. The NASDAQ down 514, 3.9%, 12,490. S&P 500 subtracted 120 points, 2.8%, landed at 41.75. Lily Jamali was telling us about the surge in coal demand. According to the U.S. Energy Information Agency, coal-fired electricity generation increased last year for the first time since 2014. Warner Brothers Discovery clicked down 7.7% after the newly merged company gave its first quarterly report. The company, of course, owns CNN and recently also, of course, dropped CNN+. Really quick check on Elon Musk's shopping list again today, shall we? Twitter posted down nearly 4%. Tesla, his, oh, by the way, other company, burned off more than 12%. Think about why. Maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow. I don't know. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million-dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is, yes, technically still April, but a warming planet seems not to care what the calendar says. We are already well into wildfire season in some parts of the Southwest in this country. Communities in northern New Mexico and central Arizona are under evacuation orders decidedly earlier than the traditional June to October fire window. Between climate change and the mega drought we're having out here, the risk now is basically year-round. So what to do you suppose, when the fuel for fires seems basically infinite, but the resources with which to fight them are decidedly finite? Marketplace's Savannah Marr reports.
The Calf Canyon Hermit's Peak fire has burned more than 54,000 acres in northern New Mexico, including outside the small city of Las Vegas.
It's awful. It's like a bad dream that doesn't stop.
Mayor Luis Trujillo says homes, cattle ranches, and businesses have been destroyed.
Financially, for our community, I'm sure it's going to hurt.
One problem as the fire season expands, our federal wildland firefighting system is understaffed. Michael Wara is with Stanford's Climate and Energy Policy Program.
It doesn't pay people a lot of money and then asks people during the fire season to spend 14 days on, 2 days off fighting fires all over the country.
Making the job more attractive would take a massive federal investment
that I think we're going to have to pay, right? Like, it's just, we're going to have to come up with the money.
And fire suppression is just a small part of the equation, says Kamiko Barrett with Headwater Economics. She says most recovery costs are borne at the local level.
Local homeowners, businesses, municipal government.
She says local governments can get out ahead of those costs by retrofitting buildings and infrastructure for fire resilience. But that won't come cheap either.
There is a role for both state and federal government to be able to offset the costs for these mitigation measures.
She says cities like Las Vegas, New Mexico should tap into funding from the federal infrastructure bill as they rebuild. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Almost a year ago now, we started talking to India Hines. She's the CEO of a wine refrigerator and a small appliance company called Vinotemp. And we talked to her about some of the problems she's been having with the global supply chain.
Trying to bring containers in, trying to negotiate with China, you know, to get your products in.
A couple of months ago, though, Vinotemp got bought.
After the acquisition, I emailed them and I said, thank you so much. I haven't slept like this since I was a teenager.
She'd been working at Vinotemp for more than 30 years. Her dad started it and she built it into what it is today.
It certainly was my baby, but, you know, I'm actually really good at letting go. And I look at like competitors and I still go on their websites and see out of stock, out of stock, out of stock. And, you know, so I know they're hurting.
But instead of worrying about that now,
they still have me doing some product design. So that I love because that's artistic. I actually got my broker's license, so I'm doing real estate, so that's fun.
All right. Anything else?
Yes, dancing. I started dancing. I'm like, okay, I got to keep the brain moving. Got to keep my feet moving. You know, those 20-year-olds, they move so fast. I want to shuffle.
Well, the shuffling never stops in this global economy. There's the rebound here in late-stage pandemic. Shanghai is, of course, still locked down. Ships are piling up offshore. There is still just a whole lot of friction in the planetary supply chain. So we decided to get somebody from the company that bought Vinotemp on the phone. Teresa Asbury is the Senior VP in charge of commercial brands at The Legacy Companies. Teresa, welcome to the program.
Oh, glad to be here. Thank you.
So you heard it from India Hines herself that, logistics is terrible and she's glad to be rid of it. Here's my question. Is it now your headache? Yes?
Yes, I think it's the company's headache, to be honest with you. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that keeps you awake at night for sure.
Is it not true, though? And look, I don't follow this as closely as you are, but it kind of seems sort of anecdotally a little bit and maybe with some data that the crunch is easing just a tad or no?
Yeah, I would say in the last, say, 6 weeks, maybe about 4 weeks, it has eased up slightly. Mm-hmm. And when I say slightly, I mean ever so slightly. We have seen some of the spot rates come down a little bit, but potentially we're thinking that's because of the closures at Shanghai. And yeah, once Shanghai opens back up, those kind of rates will go climb back up to where they were. But I would say that anecdotally, over the last 4 weeks or so, it's gotten a little bit better.
Talk to me about spot rates then. What were you paying in normal times, and what are you paying now to get, a regular container from there to here?
Yeah, sure. It's been craziness. Pre-COVID, we were landing a container on the East Coast and even into the, you know, into the middle of the country for about $3,600. And that was all in. That was not just to the ports. That was mm-hmm. a delivered rate. During the height of this, we were paying upwards of $22,000, $23,000 to get that same equipment.
Wow.
That shows you how ridiculous the rates climbed. And unfortunately, in order to guarantee product, we and everyone else had to pay those kind of rates.
Do you look, this is a loaded term and I use it intentionally. Do you feel a little bit like you're being jerked around a little bit?
Yeah, I kind of call it highway robbery,
okay.
But call it what you like. You know, we could probably call it a lot of things, but yes, absolutely. It's the law of supply and demand, right? Us, just like, you know, many other companies out there, we need our goods. The steamship lines, the freight forwarders, everybody knows that. It certainly feels like we're being jerked around in your terms.
So I was off last week, so I wasn't on the news, but you know, I read every now and then what was going on. And I thought I saw a piece go by that said the White House basically was telling people, yeah, you know what, this supply chain crunch is going to outlast the pandemic and it's going to be with us for a while. Do you buy that?
I buy it. I do. Unfortunately, I do. You know, I've heard other individuals say they think it's like a 2 to 6 month thing. We are definitely not planning on that. Unfortunately, we're in the process of negotiating our contracts right now. Typically, freight contracts come up every May, and we're kind of at the very end of negotiations. And we're actually looking at potentially paying a little bit more on our contracts so that we can, you know, more or less, although there's no guarantees, right? We can more or less guarantee space. But the point is yes, unfortunately, we feel that it's here for quite some time.
I'm going to be presumptuous here and imagine that Jay Powell listens to this radio program and is hearing you say the supply crunch is going to last for a long time. And that's got to be his worst nightmare, right? Because he can raise interest rates till the cows come home, figuratively speaking. But if we're not getting goods in the economy, then there's only so much he can do.
Exactly.
This is probably the problem of another senior executive at your company, or at least I hope for your sake it is. What are your customers and clients telling you? Are they grinning and bearing it, or are they saying, you know what, we're going to start going elsewhere because you guys are, it's too expensive and it's taking too long and I'm not satisfied?
A little of both. We have some very, you know, savvy customers that certainly do understand what's happening. We also have another level of customer who may not quite as well understand the price increases that will indicate that they're going elsewhere. But when they attempt to go elsewhere, many of the products that we're importing for this type of product come in from China or Asia in particular. Right. So they're seeing these kinds of price increases across the board. So I can't say anybody's happy about it. That's for sure.
That's for sure. Teresa Asbury, she's the corporate vice president of the commercial division at the Legacy Companies. Teresa, thanks a lot. I really appreciate your time and your expertise.
Thank you so much for having me. Good to talk with you.
Good to talk to you. Kind of brutal on Wall Street today for tech companies overall, social media brands in particular, about which one word, that word is ads. They are going to be front and center when Meta and Twitter report profits later this week. Snap announced its earnings last week and made a point of pointing out some broader economic problems that could hurt advertising demand. Problems you have probably felt as well. Supply chain issues, of course, and inflation. By another name, Marketplace's Kristen Schwab explains the connection there.
Most people that work in advertising will tell you that ad spending is a good measure of where companies think the economy is headed. Mark Singer at Deloitte Digital says if brands are worried about the possibility of an upcoming recession,
marketing is the first to go, and then it's the leading indicator when the economy is returning because it's the first to come back. We are not recommending to our clients to do that.
He says now is actually the time to keep investing in marketing, or to maybe even invest more to drum up brand loyalty. And digital is where they should put their ad dollars, especially during a pandemic that's kept people online more than ever.
We are seeing influencers growing leaps and bounds.
Social media is seeing the biggest growth in advertising in general, says Tina Moffitt at Forrester, because it's not just where consumers' eyes are. It gives brands the most bang for their buck. Campaign effectiveness is easy to measure, and ads can be targeted to consumers in certain geographical markets. Moffitt says that's really helpful if your product is readily available in New York, but would take too long to get to New Mexico.
Because they weren't going to spend media dollars in an area to promote a product where they didn't have it.
As for inflation, Barbara Kahn, a professor of marketing at Wharton, says addressing that is all about tone.
And trying to make the consumer understand we're in this together. We're trying to do the right thing. We're a partner with you. We are trying to create value.
Because when so much of how people shop right now comes down to price, explaining why it's going up builds a more honest and hopefully loyal relationship with a customer. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, which comes with the perhaps awkward acknowledgement that Fidelity is a current underwriter of this program. But to quote one of the hosts of a different public radio program with which you might be familiar, we still cover them like any other company. The news item is this. Fidelity said today that it's going to let the 23,000 or so companies whose retirement programs it administers offer Bitcoin as part of their 401k plans. The context is this. Bitcoin down 29% the past 12 months. All right, done we are, but here's your moment of economic context, getting us back to where we started, actually, housing and mortgages and home prices. From Freddie Mac this week, this data point: average interest on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage in this economy? Anybody? 5.11%. A year ago, 2.97%. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Siobhan Brett, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too.
Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.